All right, everybody, welcome back to the newest episode of the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Acevedo, joined by my co-host, Danny Duarte. We are very excited to break down some of the recent playoff games that we've seen, preview some of the upcoming games that we have coming up, and just go over some of the big injuries. We're starting to see some stars go out, which is really going to start to probably affect some of these playoff series that we have going on. Dan, what are some of your thoughts just generally on, you know, what you've seen in the playoffs so far this week?
It's going to be interesting, man. I think that two of the two favorites to reach the finals are now, you know, in jeopardy of not making it. Questionable to make it past the first round, but unlikely. But, you know, beyond that, who knows, given some of the injuries that we've seen.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very, very good test for teams like the Suns and the Bucks. Obviously, Devin Booker, Chris Middleton, those are two players that were key pieces on both teams' playoff runs last year. So I can't wait to see. I think both teams are going to be resilient. Obviously, both teams have a ton of vets on the teams with playoff experience. They've been in situations before. I think you also, when you look at specifically with the Suns, they were without Chris Paul for a long time this season. I know, obviously, Devin Booker didn't miss as many games, but it just feels like a team that's equipped and has the weapons necessary on their team to withstand at least the first round without Devin Booker. That's my general thought.
I'm curious to see how Chris Paul fares without Devin Booker. We've seen the opposite happen, but we haven't seen this happen. We've been, you know, touting Chris Paul as an MVP candidate for the last couple years and really giving him his flowers, which rightfully so, he deserves them. But again, I'm just curious to see now that it's an opposite situation, can he carry the mantle and carry the torch forward?
Yeah, it's going to be a good test. And obviously the Pelicans are pretty much an upstart team at this point, but we'll talk a little bit more about Suns Pelicans in a little bit. I do want to lead the episode off though, guys, with what I think is the most high profile series, the Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. To me, Dan, this series, despite what a lot of folks out there are saying, and I think you're feeling the same way, to me, this series is not over yet. I don't think it's possible that KD and Kyrie Irving shoot that poorly as they did in game two again in this series. I do give credit to Boston's defense. Obviously, they're turning up. They've got a really, really good game plan on KD. To me, Brooklyn just needs to find ways to get him better looks off ball, because what I'm seeing, Dan, is you see KD kind of handling the ball, and the defense just has all their eyes on KD, and they're just waiting, and they kind of have like a soft double team, and as soon as they see KD's going to pull up, they just start getting physical with him. They get in his face. They're making it really hard, and obviously for a 7-footer who can pull up from anywhere, to say that it's a hard shot, it says a lot, but Boston's really making it difficult for him. To me, I mean, obviously you guys, if you've been listening, you know how I feel. To me, Ben Simmons coming back is the guy that they're missing to turn this series in their favor. I think these teams as is, I think Boston is slightly better, but I do think with Ben Simmons, even not at 100%, I think it's enough to make a difference and swing the series. But I definitely don't think the series is over. I know a lot of people are already writing off Brooklyn, but I mean, guys, all Boston did to me is hold home court. They did what they were supposed to do. If they win one in Brooklyn, game three or game four, then I'll be really impressed. But to be honest, I see the series going back to Boston tied 2-2, Dan. What about you?
Let's wait and see. The one thing that I agree with you, I don't see KD and Kyrie both shooting so poorly in future games, but I also don't see Jason Tatum shooting so poorly and Jaylen Brown having just an average game. I mean, you look at the box score, they were pretty even across the board. So for the most part, it just to me keeps going back down to the role players playing their part and the defense. I mean, Al Horford's giving you probably his best performance in years against this Brooklyn Nets lineup, and also this defense is suffocating, to say the least. I will say that if Ben Simmons comes back, I'm very curious. I mean, everyone on this pod should already know how I feel about this. I think it's a mistake to bring him in, but I understand why you would do it. And let's not put this out of the question and out of the picture, Brian. I mean, Robert Williams is scheduled to have kind of a touch base, so to speak, an update on his status in the next couple of days. I mean, it's been about a month since he got injured, so we could also see Robert Williams sightings in the next game in the next two games or so. So again, will the series be long enough? I think we both agree it will be. But if Ben Simmons comes back and Robert Williams comes back, I think without a doubt, we both know which team we think is the better of the two.
Yeah, Robert Williams is definitely an X factor that I think a lot of folks have not kind of taken into consideration. I did read that, Dan, he is going to be traveling with the team to Brooklyn. So, I mean, obviously, we'll see. It's not really a long trip, so we'll see. I think he might give it a run for game four, but I don't think he's ultimately going to play. I think games five through seven is probably more realistic for a Robert Williams return, but I can't argue with you at all. I wish I could. If Robert Williams comes back, I would be surprised if Boston does not win the series, even with Ben Simmons. So he does make that big of an impact, guys. When you have Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown on the perimeter, and then you have Robert Williams down low, I mean, that's a game changer for sure as far as the defensive looks that Boston can give. And they're doing really well defensively, even without Robert Williams. So I definitely got to give them props for sure.
And we got to tip our hats to these role players, man. I mean, look at the contributions they're getting from Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard. I mean, these are guys that we didn't expect to show up in these moments, yet here they are. And again, you saw the role players show up for Brooklyn. So it comes down to who can hold the other team to less points. And I have Boston favored in that sense, but we'll see. We have games three and four in Brooklyn. Those are probably going to be more of a test for both teams at the end of the day. Brooklyn, from a pressure standpoint, can they live up to the hype and the pressure that they're being put on? And Boston, can they go to, you know, an opposing field and deliver?
Yeah, I kind of question, will the intensity be as high on defense on the road as it was at home? I mean, obviously, you heard the Boston crowd the other night. They were really loud, making a ton of noise, and it definitely makes an impact. And then obviously, a couple of threes go down. You have the momentum. Boston's obviously a really good team, so it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think Brooklyn necessarily has the best home court advantage in the NBA, which might end up playing a factor. If you want to know something interesting about Brooklyn, Dan, they actually did not even have a 500 record at home this year, which I think is kind of crazy. It's a big reason why they were obviously the seventh seed. Obviously, they didn't play without Kyrie in most of those games, but still, you'd like a little bit better home court advantage for sure. So we definitely have some fun games left in that Brooklyn-Boston series. To touch on Suns-Pelicans, I know we mentioned, obviously, the Devin Booker injury. I still think it was crazy, Dan, that he went off for 31 points in the first half, and then you get that hamstring injury. The timing of it just sucks for Phoenix. I think that this series is obviously going to go deeper than we probably anticipated. I think it's going to go six or seven. I still have the Suns winning. To me, they're deep. They're built to play well, even without one of CP3 or Devin Booker. I don't think they can win without either, but I think one or the other is in the lineup, they should be fine. I give props to the Pelicans, though. I mean, CJ and BI are really playing well together. That is a really respectable duo. Going to be interesting next year to see how they look if Zion ends up playing with that big three there in New Orleans. But they, man, they are a long team. Jackson Hayes at the four gives some matchup problems to most teams, and they're really athletic. They move the ball. They play defense. They play hard, and they're not just rolling over for the Suns, even though they're the one seed. They're really going for it.
Yeah, I think it's this sense of courage, in the sense of, like, they're underdogs. They have nothing to lose. You might as well go out there and play your game. We have to give our props to Willie Green for rallying his troops and kind of, you know, I think they were the 10th seed heading into, or no, they were the 9th seed. I can't remember, but, like, essentially they were still underdogs, and now, you know, they're making this series competitive. It shows a lot in terms of coaching and just the players they have. I think CJ McCollum is probably the leader of this team. He's been in this situation before. He should have been an all-star. So he understands what it takes to move forward with these playoffs and just galvanizing his troops. Brandon Ingram right now is clearly the star in terms of talent and just get out of my way, I'm going to deliver. And the one player that I think is severely underrated is Jonas Valanciunas. He is having his way with DeAndre Ayton for the most part. So that matchup to me actually goes to JV versus DeAndre Ayton. I think that not signing Ayton to a long-term contract is really biting the Suns in the butt right now. Because I feel like the effort, even though he wants to play, he's not as committed to the organization, which I don't blame him. I mean, why would you? They don't believe in you from a salary standpoint. And it's just, it's going to be interesting to see whose stars can deliver at this time, given that Devin Booker is out. I think that ultimately, you know, I would argue that Phoenix has a deeper team, yeah, without a question. But I think that, you know, play like Phoenix has the best player right now with Chris Paul. But then 2, 3, and 4, I give it to New Orleans right now.
I mean, I have to think about that one. You got Mikal Bridges.
I want to put that, you know, that caveat out there.
Yeah, of course. I think you what the point that you mentioned with DeAndre Ayton, I think is a kind of an under the radar type of story with him and his salary situation, his contract for the offseason. To me, this is an opportunity for DeAndre Ayton to go out and show, hey, I deserve that money. You know, you have Devin Booker out. DeAndre Ayton basically becomes the number two option for Phoenix. This, to me, is going to be what are we going to see from him for the rest of the series? Because obviously Valanciunas has been taking his lunch money, and I want to see better from Ayton, especially for a team that's the one seed, for a team where he has Chris Paul and Devin Booker, arguably the best backcourt in basketball, probably right there with Golden State. What is DeAndre Ayton going to bring to the table in these must-win games? To me, he is going to be the player to watch on both teams. And I think based on how he plays is going to determine how the season, how the series goes. I think he's going to play good enough, and he's going to get Phoenix into the second round.
I think so too, but I think we can both agree this series is a lot more entertaining than we thought it would be.
Yeah, I think the Booker injury is obviously a swing in the Pelicans' direction. So we're going to see, man. And actually, it's a perfect transition from one injured star to another. We found out today, guys, Chris Middleton is going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. A sprained MCL. That is, again, brutal timing for another team that was just in the finals last year, the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks. They've got their hands full against Chicago Bulls, Dan. We got a 1-1 series out there in the 3-6 matchup. To me, this is going to be a great test for Giannis and the Bucks being down Middleton. I still see them beating the Bulls. I actually think it could go 7 games now, just because at the end of the day, they still have the best player in the series. And to me, that holds so much weight. And to me, even without Middleton, I think they're still a slightly better team. However, though, with these playoffs, we've kind of seen, Dan, it's really even. No team is really a pushover, and the same goes for Chicago. I mean, DeRozan is liable to go off for 40 on any given night, like we saw the other night. And with no Chris Middleton, it kind of makes you wonder who's going to draw that assignment defensively. That's kind of my biggest concern for Milwaukee is who's going to go guard DeRozan, because not even DeRozan, you also have Zach LaVine to worry about. And if those two get a little confidence, they're going to play game 3 in Chicago. They're going to be amped up. I think they have a real chance at making this a real series, and I think they can win, which to me, Dan, is the most important part. What are you thinking about Bulls Bucks?
That boy DeRozan went off for 41 points without even making a 3. Guys, let that sink in. Sick. This guy is clutch big time. I love what he's doing in this season in general, kind of rewriting his narrative, which is amazing to see. I think that right now, to your point, 7 games, I'm probably giving it to the best player in the world. I said it here first. Giannis is the best player in the world. I don't care what anyone else says. I would give him the series over the Bulls, but it's going to go 7 games, man. I think that one, you know, for top player easily goes to Bucks, but then the next two, it's a toss-up. Like, I could easily see DeMar and Zach LaVine equaling, being better than Jrue Holiday. So, like, I just think that overall, they're a lot more top-heavy now with Chris Middleton out, the Bulls. But to your point, Bucks are a more complete team. They just need those role players to show up. I mean, we need Bobby Portis. I know he was out that last game with that eye injury. We need Bobby Portis to show up. We need Grayson Allen to show up. We need Pat Connaughton to show up. We need Brook Lopez to show up. Like, now that Middleton's out, they got to get their scoring from somewhere else. And we know what Jrue Holiday is going to give you. We know what Giannis is going to give you. We got to depend on these other guys.
Yeah, and more importantly, now that the Bulls went ahead and stole game 2, the Bucks have to win in Chicago. So it's just, I don't know if it's going to be game 3 or 4, but in my opinion, you do not want to go back down 3-1 to Milwaukee. I think you want a 2-2 series going into game 5, gives you the best chance to win 2 out of 3, and you go from there. But this one in the Central Division has become a much, much more interesting playoff race, kind of like Suns Pelicans. So We'll see what ends up happening there. Another high profile series we have going on in the Western Conference, guys, also tied 1-1 as of this recording, is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. To me, Dan, game 3 and game 5 are going to be the pivotal games in this series to kind of tell us who's going to win it. Timberwolves are obviously kind of an upstart, sparky young team. They stole a game in Memphis, and now the Grizzlies kind of need to steal one in Minnesota back. I don't know if it's going to be game 3 or 4, but I do think they're going to win one of the next two games, and it's going to go back to Memphis tied 2-2. And I think Memphis is probably going to win this one in 7 as well. It's hard to believe that we're going to have this many 7-game series, but it just feels like these teams are they're actually pretty even, even though the Memphis was obviously a 2 seed and Minnesota's a 7. Minnesota does not play like a 7 seed, guys, not a traditional 7 seed anyway. And I think with guys like Towns, Anthony Edwards is liable to go off at any given night. D'Angelo Russell even has played really poorly. And the fact that, you know, Minnesota was able to win one with Russell playing as poorly as he has, I mean, if he even plays to his averages in games 3 and 4 with them being at home, I mean, you'd like to think Minnesota has a good chance. But I think Memphis is fired up. I think they slept on Minnesota a little bit game 1. And I think they're awake now. I think they're ready to go.
This series is going to go down to adjustments. I mean, first game, obviously, Memphis was not prepared. They didn't expect what was coming. Minnesota proved them wrong. Second game, they adjusted, and Minnesota wasn't prepared. I mean, I saw the energy. It just wasn't there for Minnesota. They were kind of taking it for granted. I think that now, going into game 3, both of these teams are energized. Now, I will give props to the Memphis Grizzlies. They're a deeper team, and they've adjusted. Steven Adams, I don't think, is going to be a factor at all moving forward in this series. I mean, we saw he only played 3 minutes in game 2. I just don't expect him to be played, period, given the mismatch and the disadvantage he has against Kat. But how are the rest of the guys going to perform? We know that, for the most part, Anthony Edwards and Ja Morant are going to write each other off. I think, for the most part, Kat's going to be a little bit better than Jaren Jackson Jr. and probably another player like Desmond Bane. So how does everyone contribute? D'Lo's been awful. If he starts going off, this is going to be a series. I mean, Memphis does not match up well with Minnesota at all. So it's going to be a lot more coaching style and just big players showing up in the big moment. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think Taylor Jenkins made some really nice adjustments in game 2, which is, I think, a big reason why Memphis was able to come away with the victory. I think they're going to need big series from Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. I think, for the most part, we know what we're going to get from Ja Morant, but it's those secondary guys that are really, to me, going to make the difference in this series. And for Minnesota, can they get performances like they got in game 1 from Malik Beasley and Jaden McDaniels? Now that they're going to be at home, we all know bench players tend to play a little better at home. If they can get 2 solid performances, I mean, Minnesota could be in a good spot all in all. But to me, this is one of the bigger toss-ups of all the series right now, Dan. What do you think?
Yeah, man, I told you from the beginning, it's just a bad matchup for Memphis, so I don't really look at the seeding as much. I just think of the matchups and just the overall player personnel, and it's who wants it more. I mean, both these teams are relatively younger teams and experienced in the playoffs, so I think it's a lot more just execution and match and coach adjustments / player adjustments that are ultimately going to lead one team to the next round.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. It's going to be fascinating to see who ends up coming out on top there. Another series, surprise we have this many, that is tied 1-1 after 2 games is Mavericks versus the Utah Jazz. So obviously, for those of you guys who didn't watch, Jalen Brunson absolutely went off. He, to me, Dan, is playing himself into some very big money going into the offseason. The Mavericks really needed someone to step up with Luka Doncic gone, and Jalen Brunson grabbed the bull by the horns. He shot super efficiently. The Mavs hit 22 threes in game 2. So I don't know if I can expect that to continue, but I mean, you love to see it as a Dallas fan. It is hard to win in Utah. That is kind of my big concern for Dallas. And Luka right now, obviously, as we know, is on everybody's mind. He's questionable for game 3 as of right now. So him playing, to me, is a huge swing, because I think with Luka, the Mavericks are a better team. They should win the series. But Dan, I don't know what it is about Utah. They just, it feels disappointing to me. It feels like every year they've gotten almost worse. Do you feel that? You get that vibe from Utah?
Do you want to know why, Brian? Do you want to know why Utah has always been disappointing?
Is it okay? I almost think you're going to go at a Rudy Gobert angle, but I can't tell. Please tell me.
1,000%. It is all on Rudy Gobert.
100% on Rudy Gobert. Not a single blame on Donovan Mitchell, who, in my opinion, as much as I love Mitchell, Spida, he's one of the worst perimeter defenders in the league. I'm just saying.
1,000%. He definitely needs to improve. But we're talking about, if Utah didn't have a 3-time defensive player of the year that is unplayable in the playoffs, you have to agree with me. He is unplayable in the playoffs down the stretch. We wouldn't be so disappointed in them. Like, just flat out. Quinn Snyder needs to adjust with his lineups. He needs to adjust with his, you know, his roster and find a better way. But this team is not good defensively. They rely too heavily on essentially forcing people down the lane to Rudy Gobert to block them. And then everyone in the playoffs knows what to do. So they kick it out and shoot threes, or they switch up they do pick and rolls to switch up the offense. It happens every series. It's been happening for the past 2 years at least. And they haven't adapted. Like, it's very disappointing, because it's led by this amazing talent on defense, but that's a huge liability in the playoffs. And he can't, dude, he can't score outside of 5 feet. Like, it's really sad.
No, it's trust me, he has liability in a lot of aspects, and I agree with you. They kind of do kick the ball out on offense, and then it kind of makes it hard for Gobert to rotate out, because what he is a rim protector. And I just feel like in the modern NBA play style, it's just less emphasized than it used to be. And it's sometimes, if you can't switch like the Miami Heat do with Bam Adebayo, I mean, it becomes very difficult to have somebody like that at the five. So it's definitely a cause for concern. And Utah obviously is kind of locked into him contract wise. Donovan Mitchell, I mean, it doesn't feel like he believes that they can win. I don't know what it is. I think maybe knowing Gobert is your second best player, to me, it's just not good enough. I think that's what it boils down to. And that, to me, you know, Dan, I think we disagree on his value. I think you're right. When it comes to the playoffs, his value goes down compared to his value in the regular season. But to me, I just don't think you can win consistently with Rudy Gobert as your second best player in this Western Conference. That's what I think it boils down to.
Well, that's all that should matter then, right?
Yeah, his value. Yeah. You cannot pay him that type of money, even though he gives you great value in the regular season when it matters most. I mean, you know, like you mentioned, he's kind of unplayable.
At this point, like, it's no longer just an observation or, like, you know, like, just someone hating. At this point, it's a fact. Like, teams go out of their way to attack him because they know he's not good on switches and just in general getting out of the post. He's not comfortable with that. And Utah hasn't done a good job building a roster around him. And we've known for the past several years that there's a fracture in that relationship between their superstars. Don't be surprised with Danny Ainge now under management as their manager, if one of those two goes, and I think you and I both know who's probably going to get the boot.
Oh, yeah. And I still like Dallas's chances of winning the series. I won't rule out Utah, but I don't feel great about them moving forward, for sure. But I it would be interesting to see if Utah did find a way to win this series with Luka. That would be really impressive. I still don't think they would beat the Suns in the next round, but it just feels like they're kind of a little bit of a playoff treadmill, so to speak. It just doesn't feel like they can get much further than they've already been. So with that said, Warriors Nuggets is our other Western Conference, our final Western Conference series. Right now, the Warriors are up 2-0. I mean, they pretty much smacked the Nuggets in both games. Denver looks like they're on the verge of breaking down. Obviously, no MPJ, no Jamal Murray. It's clear that, you know, this team is pretty outmatched all in all. I will say the Warriors just look more and more impressive by the day. Their style just fits for the playoffs. They have so many shooters. They play an exciting brand of basketball to watch. And I mean, I think they're on I don't want to say a cakewalk, but as close as you can get to a cakewalk to the second round in the Western Conference. What are your thoughts on the series, Dan?
I think it's a wrap, man. I mean, we knew from the start they have a superior lineup. They have the superior coaching. It was just a bad matchup for this Denver Nuggets in the first round. And I just, you know, like, I go back to it, man. I want to see a little bit more out of Nikola Jokic. I know that his second best player now is Aaron Gordon, which is suboptimal, to say the least.
I'd rather have Gobert than Aaron Gordon as my second player.
No doubt. So I know, like, Nikola Jokic is being dealt a bad hand, but again, I just want to see a little bit more out of him. I want to see him will his team to at least one win. So let's wait and see what happens. But I don't think it's worth mentioning, man. I think Golden State is probably going to make it to the Western Conference Finals, and who knows, man? I mean, they're just built differently with Draymond as that anchor, straight up. Yeah.
No, and great point, and no question to me, if Devin Booker is not back in time for the Western Conference Finals, the Golden State Warriors should be the favorites, in my opinion. I think that should go without saying. If the Suns can get past the Pelicans and then potentially the Mavericks or Jazz, I mean, without D-Book in that conference final, I don't love their chances at all. I would definitely take the Warriors in that one. But yeah, like you said, 2-0 Warriors. I think Denver wins one of the next two, and then Golden State probably closes out in five, and then we go from there. And to pivot to our final two Eastern Conference series, both looking like sweeps so far. The Sixers and the Raptors. Sixers are up 3-0. Joel Embiid went ahead and exercised some demons that he had from Toronto from his last playoff series against them, where he got beat on a buzzer beater. He beat them with the buzzer beater in game three. We heard him kind of talk some shit to Drake, saying he's ready for that sweep. I'll be honest, I don't know if I see a sweep, but I do see the Sixers winning in five. Dan, I mean, you picked the Raptors in seven. What happened to Toronto, man? And please don't tell me it's just because of Scottie Barnes, because, you know, to go from a seven-game series to potentially getting swept, I don't think one player makes that big of an impact.
It does when they're a Rookie of the Year finalist. Oh, but no, I think two things happened. And one of them, I mean, we called it from the beginning. I just didn't expect things to turn around so quickly. So obviously the injury, no need to touch on that. They lost a very good, versatile, like, overall player. But beyond that, you know, those things happen. The Sixers players, they're just turning up. I mean, when you and I had the discussion going into the playoffs, just giving our previews of the round, we talked about Joel Embiid obviously going off, hoping that James Harden would go off, which, let's be real, he's still not hitting where we want him to be hitting, and Tyrese Maxey being a great value. We at no point discussed Tobias Harris, because yep, we thought he was so, like, pretty much a write-off, nor did we discuss any of the other players like Danny Green or just anyone else from Philadelphia giving them value. Now, these other players are putting in work. They're giving them great stats, and it looks like Doc is actually coaching pretty decently. So, I was thoroughly shocked that the rest of the lineup and these role players are giving them the value that they're giving them. And I didn't see this coming, given the historical record that they've shown throughout the season. Now, I will say one thing, and I don't want to, like, try to speak this into existence, but we have the coach that is most notorious for blowing leads in a series. I hope that doesn't come true. But on a much more serious note, when this team faces the Heat, we need better from James Harden. I mean, the Heat are not the Raptors, and James Harden, he's not inspiring, bro. Like, I just keep going back to this. He does not look like the player we expected.
I agree there. And I think Tobias Harris has been the biggest unexpected player from this series for sure. I think if he's playing the way he's playing, you add on Tyrese Maxey, and then obviously Embiid playing the way he is. I mean, if you can even get like 90% of prime James Harden, or even 80%, this is a damn good team with four legitimate scoring options. My biggest concern for them moving forward is going to be their defense, actually. That's really the only thing I really want to see. Can they do it against high-level competition? Again, no disrespect to the Raptors, but they're not teams like the Heat, the Celtics, the Nets, the Bucks, etc. So that's kind of how I feel about the Sixers. But I was expecting you to go a little bit more negative on the Raptors, Dan. I feel like they really kind of, as much hype as we kind of gave them and gave them props coming into this, I feel like guys like Fred VanVleet is kind of, I don't know, he just doesn't look like that guy to me. And obviously Siakam had a really strong regular season, but you're the best player in Toronto. Where you been at?
Yeah, I'm more disappointed in Siakam than Fred VanVleet. Now, I will give Siakam some credit. I mean, he does have to guard two very difficult players in Tobias Harris for this series and in Joel Embiid occasionally. So I can understand his lack of continuity from the regular season. Fred VanVleet and also Gary Trent Jr. I mean, I feel like we don't talk enough about them. They're both just playing god-awful. I mean, they're shooters. So when they go on a hot streak, they're good. But when they go on a cold streak, they're just god-awful. And they're going through that. Now, it begs the question, did Fred VanVleet deserve to be an all-star over Siakam if this is how he's going to perform? You know, to be determined. But ultimately, it's just they got cold at the worst time, and they're making Nick Nurse look really bad.
I agree. Hopefully they win one just to give us a competitive series and make it a gentleman's sweep. So we'll see. And then lastly, Heat Hawks. I mean, Dan, game two felt a lot like game one, to be honest with you, even though game one was a little bit more of a blowout. I don't know. It didn't feel like Atlanta had the horses to keep up with Miami. I mean, Trey played a little better, but it wasn't enough. I still think the Hawks win one game in Atlanta, maybe two, and then the series is over. So not too much to get into here. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Trae Young goes on a crazy streak, but feels like Miami's in his head a little bit, and he just doesn't have enough weapons to contend with that defense.
I don't think it's his scoring, man. I just think he's making poor decisions. I mean, he ended with a double-double in the worst way possible. 28 points and turnovers. 10 turnovers.
Yeah. Really careless.
I mean, just, you know, they're playing really bad basketball, and I think that they're just overmatched. If Clint Capela were playing, very different series. I think that it becomes a lot more competitive, but this Heat defense is just giving Trey a huge run for his money, and even with Bogdan going absolutely off in that fourth quarter, hitting literally everything, the Heat still found a way. So, you know, it's credit to them. And also, just I don't think that the Hawks had the personnel to match up with this Heat team, unfortunately.
I agree. I think it's safe to say that through two games, the Hawks look like the worst team in the playoffs right now. And I mean, maybe that's credit to the Heat. Maybe them continue dominating in the second round. But I mean, it just seems like the least competitive series.
I think it's the Nuggets. I think you're not giving the Hawks enough credit. The Nuggets aren't looking as good as that series is looking a lot less competitive to me than this one.
Hey, let's see your favorite phrase. Let's see how the rest of the games go out. But Dan, do you have any other?
We're basing it off of what you've seen so far. I'm basing it off of what I've seen so far.
No, hey, listen, that's fair, and that's why we have different takes, my man. It's great to see. Do you have any other thoughts you wanted to run through, Dan, before we get ready to watch these game threes?
No, I mean, I'm excited to see if Trae Young shows up at home. I'm excited to see if, you know, Jokic can prove to us why he's that guy. And last but certainly not least, how does Milwaukee respond? I mean, they are the champions. How do they respond in a pretty hostile environment, in my opinion, in Chicago? I mean, we know that town loves basketball, so I think it's going to be interesting, man.
Yeah, that's going to be electric in Chicago. I still think Giannis is going to find a way to win one of two, game three or game four. And I think Trae Young and Jokic, those are going to be two guys I'm really going to keep my eye on over the next couple of days. They should not get swept. For as hyped as they are, for as great as they are, and we've seen them be great, to see them both get swept would be kind of a shock, all in all.
I'm super aligned with you. If they're swept, I don't know at what point you can start excusing them for their team and their coaching and not put the blame on them.
Yeah, at that point you got to look in the mirror and say, what could I have done better? And they may have a very, very long off season to kind of think about that. So we'll see how it turns out. The series have been really good. A couple of surprises with these injuries, like we've touched on, but I think we have some exciting first round basketball left. And then, you know, second round with some of these matchups that are potentially looming here, really, really blockbuster type matchups, hopefully in the second round. So with that said, guys, thank you so much for listening to the episode. For those of you guys who haven't already, please follow, like, subscribe the Fantasy Crossover Podcast on Twitter, Instagram. We're also obviously on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We definitely value all feedback. We want to do better. We're obviously transitioning into more NBA talk as opposed to fantasy. So, you know, we're doing something new and we're learning day by day. So any feedback you guys have, any comments, we always appreciate. Dan, any thoughts before we let them go for the night?
No, man. Just stay tuned for the NBA fantasy or the NBA playoffs, man. I mean, I think that we're all excited right now. So
yeah,
keep watching.
Lots of new headlines every single night. So with that said, guys, thank you so much for listening and have a great rest of your day.